You're listening to the Man Project Podcast with your host, Ted Rice.
Would you like to be bigger, leaner, and stronger?
Do you want to develop the confidence to go after what you want in life? Or how about becoming the man that women want to be with?
We're here twice a week to empower you to reach your full potential
so you can live life on your own terms. Subscribe to our podcast or download our free app in the iTunes Store
or Google Play.
Find it all at manprojectpodcast.com. Now, back to the show.
Do you ever get a little confused with all the nutrition information out there? Some people say all you need to do to get lean is to eat paleo, or to eat clean, whatever that means, or to just eat real food. And on the other hand, you have people who say none of that matters. As long as you're eating less calories than what you burn, you can eat Twinkies, ice cream, donuts. It really doesn't matter. It all comes down to calories and also your macros. Well, who better to give some insight on this subject than a guy who's gotten up and competed as a professional natural bodybuilder? He's also competed at the elite level as a power lifter, squatting over 600 pounds, bench pressing over 380 pounds, and deadlifting 700 pounds. And in addition to all that, he also has a PhD in nutritional science. His name is Lane Norton, and he is a coach who uses his scientific background and athletic experience to optimize results for his clients through training, nutrition, and supplementation. And today he's here to clear up some of this misinformation and tell us what we really need to do to get lean. Lane Norton, welcome to the Man Project.
Thanks for having me, Ted. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. And we like to get things rolling with a quote. And I know you got a great one for us. So let's hear it.
Yeah, it's by Admiral William McRaven giving the commencement speech to, I believe it was Stanford. And he was talking about the U.S. Navy SEALs and the hardships they go through. And his quote was, "You will fail. You will likely fail often. It will be discouraging. It will be painful. And at times it will test you to your very core." And I just love that quote. I think a lot of people think that anybody who's been successful has just had it easy and things have been laid out before them. And the fact of the matter is most successful people got there just because they didn't quit when everybody else went home. So I love that quote. I actually recite it to myself sometimes before big lifts.
I like that, man. And we spoke a little bit before we hopped on the recording or started recording. And yeah, if you haven't seen McRaven's, he's an admiral.
Navy.
Sorry, get those things mixed up. Admiral McRaven's, I think it was a graduation speech, right? Oh. It is amazing. I'll put the link up to that because there's some great lessons there, including the one that you brought up, Lane. And Lane, speaking of successful people, you are so accomplished. Like I mentioned in the intro, you are a professional bodybuilder, a professional natural bodybuilder. I should be specific there. You are a professional elite power lifter. You've got a 700 pound deadlift, 600 pound, over 600 pound squat, I believe, and over 380 pound bench press. And you managed to get your PhD in nutritional science and develop a business. Can you share the story of like how you got into all that and made all that happen? Because you're 32 right now, so you're a young dude, super successful, super passionate about what you're doing. How'd that all start for you and how'd you get to where you're at now?
Whew, man, that sounds like a lot of work when you say it all like that. It just goes to show another great quote I like, if you don't mind, is unless a man takes on more than he can possibly do, he will never do all he possibly can. When you look back at when you say stuff like that, I'm actually listening to you roll that off. I'm like, my God, how did I do all that?
But, yeah.
Basically, the way I got into lifting weights and the industry was I got picked on a lot as a kid. I mean, like as far as high school goes, I was on the lowest end of the totem pole in terms of popularity. So I was the kid that everybody made fun of, didn't get any attention from girls. You've heard the cliches, blah, 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 blah. And I started lifting weights as a way to improve my self-esteem and hopefully get some attention from girls. And eventually that kind of shallow beginnings for weightlifting led to a passion for weightlifting and just doing it for the sake of loving the actual process. But I always had been interested in science when I was a kid and was good at it. And when I went, I actually went to undergraduate school in Florida, thinking I was going to be a marine biologist. I love sharks. I wanted to be a shark biologist, actually.
Nice.
And but this is about the time that my passion for weightlifting was kind of really brewing. And I come to find out that marine biology is an extremely hard field to get jobs in. I mean, extremely hard. And if you have a PhD in marine biology, you can expect to make like something like just above the poverty level for marine biology. So I started thinking about, well, do I, you know, maybe I love it, but do I really want to be struggling the rest of my life? And decided just to do a general degree in biochemistry at undergraduate school. And then as I was nearing the end of that degree, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I had already competed in bodybuilding. I was real passionate about it. I knew I'd love to do something with that, but I didn't know exactly what. And I thought, well, I know I want to do something in that industry, so why not go and get more education? I never felt like that could possibly hurt me. And so I started looking at different graduate school programs, and I actually found the one I went to at University of Illinois in Dr. Don Lehman's lab, who Dr. Lehman is just, I can't even describe to you how intelligent this guy is and how brilliant he was. And I found his stuff because I just went to PubMed, which is kind of a big database of studies, and started typing in keywords that I was interested in, like muscle protein synthesis and leucine. And he was one of the first guys that popped up. So I went, visited with him, really liked his approach to research. He was a straight shooter and very down to earth. He was very much encouraging about a lot of professors. They don't want to listen to what you want to do. They only just want to tell you what research to do. And Dr. Lehman was very open to doing whatever I wanted to do. So it was a perfect fit. And so I decided to go there. And during that time, while I was doing my PhD, about 2 years in, I was writing for bodybuilding.com and doing kind of a lot of free writing for different magazines and whatnot, just to try and get my name out there. And I would get probably 30, 40 emails a day from people asking questions, which I loved. I loved helping people. I loved it. But the problem was becoming, it was taking so much of my time, I needed to start justifying that amount of time. And so I opened my business, BioLane LLC, and I still answered questions every day. But basically, if somebody wanted a training program or a nutrition program, if they wanted to go to that level, then I would start charging. And I just kind of started that just as a way to make money on the side during graduate school. And by the time I was done with my PhD, 4 years later, it was a full-blown, full-time income. And I just said, well, I really like this. I enjoy coaching. And why not just do this? So that's what I did.
Wow, that's a really cool story, Lane. And I've never heard you say that before. So you started as this nerdy, unpopular kid, which, yeah, I can't relate to that at all. I mean, I was playing Dungeons and Dragons in junior high. I got slightly cooler in high school, but I got in with a bad crowd. But then you followed your passion for science, loved sharks, didn't really see it. You saw it being maybe cool, but not really giving you the type of lifestyle. And it was even hard to even get a job there. Loved fitness, had a passion for it, dove in, found a great mentor who cultivated your curiosity. It allowed you to do your own thing. And by the time you graduated with your PhD, which you started your business during that time while you were studying, by helping people and establishing yourself as someone who knows a lot and who is also caring and wants to help people, you had a full-blown business by the time you were graduated. That is an awesome story. I love it, man.
Yeah, I always tell people I'm a big believer in the American dream because I've lived it.
I like that.
Just an idea. And just by treating people right and working hard, I live my dream.
Yeah, that is such a powerful story. And I know that everyone listening to you share it maybe got some perspective on their life and what they should do. And the real secret to success is not how do I get money or how do I get stuff from people, but how do I give to people and how do I solve their problems? Then you won't even have enough time to deal with all your clients, all the people who are trying to get you for writing programs or writing nutrition. In fact, Lane, you said you couldn't write my client's nutrition program because you're so busy. So that's awesome, man. And Lane, you're so accomplished as a bodybuilder, which takes a ton of training, and also as a power lifter, which arguably is much more difficult to do to get up to those big lifts. And I know we could talk for hours about training and how to optimize it to get results. But what I think would serve the guy listening right now who's struggling with getting the fat off. Maybe he's done a few diets, a few fad diets, but he just can't stick with them. And you have a lot to say about this. You've worked with a lot of physique athletes who, apart from the way they look, they actually have some real bad eating disorders at times. Some of them, not all of them, of course. And you said some great stuff about there not being a weight loss problem in this country. It's people not being able to stay with what they're doing and to make it into a lifestyle change. So can you talk about where people are at with that, and to help that guy listening who's maybe tried those diets, has put the weight back on, and just wants something that works for him that he can stick with?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a huge passion of mine. A lot of my stuff I've looked into research-wise has just come about because of practical, what I've observed practically. So I would notice that clients who stuck with me consistently throughout the years were able to stay kind of like leaner and maintain more of their body fat losses that they'd had, whether they be competitors on a contest prep diet. You know, they were able to stay leaner in the off season and maintain more of it. Whereas I'd see people who would come to me for a contest prep, and then they would go off and do their own thing in the off season, come back, and et cetera, et cetera. And what I would notice is every time they came back, it was almost like harder and harder to get them ready. They had put on more fat in the off season and on even less calories than they had the previous off season. So it just started to get to the point where it didn't make sense to me. And the amount of calories that I was having to get these people down to just to get them to lose weight seemed ridiculous. And so I started looking at the research out there, and what I found was, quite frankly, it's pretty, I don't want to say upsetting, but it's pretty grim in terms of fat loss. I mean, basically the research out, there was actually a study that came out a couple of years ago where they looked at dieting, and their definition of a successful diet was something where people had to lose at least 10% of their body weight and keep it off for at least 2 years. And the failure rate was over 90%.
Wow. And terrible.
Yeah. Really bad. And in fact, in approximately half or more of those cases, not only did they put all the fat back on, they actually added more fat. So they actually ended up fatter than they started. I can give you a personal account of that. My father did a keto diet, lost 30 pounds. 5 years later, he weighs 50 pounds more. So he had a net gain of 20 pounds. So in fact, he would have been healthier by never dieting in the first place. So anyway, this research study, their conclusion at the end was that dieting was ineffective for weight loss, for long-term weight loss. I don't know if you've noticed kind of the government language on weight loss, but they actually don't use the term that weight loss that often anymore, like the American Dietetic Association. They say weight management. I don't know if you've noticed that, but that is a direct result of the fact of the ineffectiveness of dieting. And now people will hear that and they'll say, Lane, that's bull crap. I lost 30 pounds doing this. Okay, did you keep it off for the rest of your life? Did you keep it off for 2 years? Did you keep it off for 1 year? Could you keep it off for 3 months? Because most people, they will do a diet, and usually some sort of fad diet, because people want fast results. So they will do ketogenic diet, or they will do paleo, or they will do intermittent fasting, or just pick any one of a multitude of diets out there, HGC diet, whatever you want. And sure, they'll lose weight, but what happens when they go back to eating normally, quote unquote normally? They put it all back on and more. And so the data out there, what it basically says is that if you don't want excess body fat, never gain it in the first place, because you're not getting it off. So I don't believe that it's a death sentence for fat loss, that if you get body fat, you can never get rid of it. And that 10% of people who do lose weight and keep it off, there's some commonalities. The number one thing for them keeping it off is consistency. It's a lifestyle. They're able to do it for the rest of their lives. And for most people, my assistant, she's great. Sohee Lee is her name. If you guys don't know her, I'd suggest following her. She's also the co-host on my podcast. She had a great quote. She said, if the way you're eating right now, if you can't see yourself doing that in 3 months, in 6 months, in 12 months, in 2 years, you have got to rethink your plan, because it's going to fail. And I thought that was a really poignant remark, because it's true and the data bears it out.
Right. And something you have mentioned in the past on your videos is something called metabolic damage. And you had talked about it as something that, where some people will do the math, the weight loss math, the fat loss math, and it just won't work out mathematically, meaning oh, if I just cut my calories this much, I should lose these many pounds of fat every week. And then you start to plateau and something changes. Is that something you still believe in? Well, can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Going back, metabolic damage was the popular term. It had already been out there. And I wish I had never actually called it metabolic damage or acknowledged it as that, because there's no permanent damage. It's not like you're screwed and you can never lose weight or anything like that. What you're dealing with is something called metabolic adaptation, where when you diet down, when you reduce calories, your body will lower its metabolic rate in order to prevent you from starving yourself, essentially. Now, what's interesting is, let me be clear, whenever you diet, whenever you restrict calories, you are going to have some metabolic adaptation. That is a normal part of dieting down. But what's interesting is when you go pretty low calorie, the body almost overreacts and you actually slow metabolism down more than you would predict. In fact, there was a recent study, and I wish I had it on hand, but basically they looked at people's resting metabolic rate before they started dieting, and they looked at their predicted metabolic rate based on their lean body mass and some other factors. And then they looked at their predicted metabolic rate at the end of the diet based on their lean body mass, their fat mass, all that sort of thing. And then they actually measured their metabolic rate. And I believe the difference between their resting metabolic rate, their actual metabolic rate, and their predicted metabolic rate was 400 calories a day. So they were burning 400 calories per day less than would be predicted by all their anthropometric measurements. So, and when I talk about metabolic adaptation, what I talk about is, one of the big reasons that people add body fat back and they add it so fast is because, think about most of the fad diets out there. They're all very low calorie.
Sure.
And so of course people lose weight rapidly, but their metabolism slows down. And then when they're done, what do? Usually people are dieting for something, whether it's summer or it's a wedding or that sort of thing, or the holidays come up, some event comes up. Think about how long it takes to grow muscle. Like, let's look at 10 pounds of muscle. You're talking about years of work. How long does it take to put on 10 pounds of fat? People do that over the holidays every single year. Like, it's extremely rapid. And so think about, if you're beating your metabolism down with super low calories, whenever you reintroduce those calories, your body's almost like a sponge. It's just going to soak it all up. So that's kind of what I'm talking about with that, in that, yes, there's going to be a certain amount of metabolic adaptation that occurs when you diet down, but you've really got to be careful. And one of the things I tell people is, you want to diet on as many calories as you can. And that may seem counterintuitive, but if you can lose body fat steadily on 2,500 calories a day, by God, do that. Don't do 1,500, because sure, you'll lose weight faster at the beginning, but by the time, you will eventually plateau. And now you've plateaued at a calorie level that's so low, what are you going to do now? Go to 1,200? Go to 1,100? You're going to do 2 hours of activity a day? And I think the other thing that's important to realize is that people will listen to me and they'll be like, Lane, that there's no way that you're saying people defy the laws of thermodynamics, or you're saying that it's not calories in versus calories out. No, it is calories in versus calories out. Absolutely. But we're not bomb collimators. We're not a closed system. We are an open system. And what makes in the equation of calories in versus calories out is extremely complex. It's not static. It's always adaptive. It's always changing. And we have to acknowledge that. There's a researcher, Dr. McLean, in University of Colorado, and he had a very, very great quote. And he said, I'm paraphrasing, but he said that the body, its response to dieting is comprehensive. It changes at every level, and it's focused on restoring depleted energy reserves and depleted body fat mass. And any diet strategy that fails to account for these metabolic influences is going to fail. That's essentially what he said. And he does amazing research on this stuff. So one of the major things you see with people who are able to lose weight and keep it off is, one, they're consistent, and two, they lose weight slower. The slower you lose it, the more likely you are to keep it off. And so that's another big thing. We're such a right now society. We got fast food. Even I'm that way. Like, I have a cell phone. Like, it's amazing. Think about it. I have an iPhone that I can get the internet. I can look at anything I want in the world in seconds. And if that internet takes more than 2 seconds to load up, I'm about to throw the phone through the window.
You're pretty spoiled. I know what you mean, man.
Exactly. And so, unfortunately, our bodies aren't iPhones. We don't respond that fast. I mean, to change your body, you're talking about having to take a long time. And think about it. If you've gained 40 pounds of fat, chances are, for the most part, chances are you didn't do that in a couple months. You know, chances are you did that over the course of years. And so you need to be willing to accept the fact that it's probably going to take you a couple of years to healthily lose that weight and keep it off.
Yeah. And you're making some amazing points, and you've researched this topic so well. And not only have you researched it, you put it into practice when you do your consulting with physique competitors and bodybuilders. You've done it with yourself when you competed or when you still compete. And if you're just loving what Lane is saying right now, make sure you go to his website, BioLane. That's BioLane.com. Of course, that's going to be on the show notes. And check out his new book with Sohee Lee, ReverseDietingBook.com. We're going to get into that a little bit later. But if you're tired of the fatty type of diets that you go on and you're like, yeah, I can do this. I mean, I'm never going to stay on a diet like this because it's kind of weird. I kind of hate it. And people think I'm weird for buying special flour and baking my own sort of gluten-free weird bread at home. Then start paying attention to guys like Lane who have a background in the science, who really break it down and understand what the hell is going on. Because like you said, Lane, it's a complex system. It's not just calories in and calories out. Well, it is that, but there's all these other things that are happening in our physiology that shift the calorie burning up or shift the calorie burning down. We need to be aware of those things. So Lane, you've also said, and this ties into the points you've been making, the amount of times you try to diet during your life is directly proportional to the amount of fat you gain in your life. And for the guy listening out there, it's like, man, I was going to just let myself go during the holidays. We're in December right now.
Yep.
And then I was planning on dieting down, and yeah, maybe I've noticed that my metabolism doesn't bounce back as fast, but Lane, you're telling me to do it slow. And what is the answer for people who are used to doing the yo-yo dieting? I know you use something called flexible dieting.
Yes. So I got to flexible dieting, or also called if it fits your macros, IIFYM, just by sheer brute force of going through so many clients and realizing that they can't stick to chicken, rice, and broccoli for the rest of their lives, right? So with flexible dieting, basically no foods are off limits, period. I don't restrict foods from people. Now, that's with the caveat that my clients, for example, I have them hit specific amounts of protein, carbs, and fats per day, okay, and fiber. Fiber is important, so you got to get enough fiber. And flexible dieting has a lot of kind of nonsense around it in terms of people don't understand it very well. Now, first things first, people will hear that and they'll say, well, I don't want to track my protein, carbs, and fats. You know, that sounds
I'm thinking that right now, Lane.
That sounds like a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
Well, look, here's the deal. If you actually want results, it's going to require some input. If you want to go on fad diets and you want to keep yo-yoing, then that's your business. But it is what it is. Like, I can say, well, I'd like to throw an 80-mile-an-hour fastball, but I don't really want to work that hard at it. Well, tough shit. You're never going to throw that 80-mile-an-hour fastball. You know what I mean? It's just going to take some sweat equity. That's what there is to it. But to be honest with you, there's all these great online resources like for the iPhone, My Macros Plus, MyFitnessPal.com, which is free, MyNetDiary.com. It really doesn't take that much time out of your day to figure out what you're eating. And so anyways, if people say that to me, that that's hard and they don't want to do it, then my response is, that's fine. You'll want to go work with somebody else then. Or not to be mean, but
they're
sorry,
not going to do the work that is going to be required for them to get the results
exactly.
they want.
Like at a certain point, you just have to do it. Sorry. That's another thing that they show, that people who lose weight and keep it off are self-monitors. They self-monitor. Okay. Now, a lot of people will say, well, are you telling me for the rest of my life, I got to take a food scale to take my kids out to a restaurant? No, that's not what I'm telling you. What I'm telling you is, like, for example, when I go out to eat, I've been tracking my macros so long and tracking my food that I know about what's in stuff. Okay. And so if I go out to a restaurant, if they don't list their nutritional information online, I'll go search the ingredients that were in the dish, or I'll go search kind of a similar dish at another restaurant, which they're out there, trust me, and I'll make it my best guess. Okay. Now, am I probably going to be off a little bit? Yeah. But I'm still self-monitoring. I'm still eating mindfully. I don't go off the deep end. You know what I mean? And the beauty of flexible dieting is, since no foods are off limit, a lot of times you don't feel the need to go off the deep end. You don't feel the need to go off the deep end at Thanksgiving because you can have dark meat turkey. You can have stuffing. You can have potatoes. You can have pumpkin pie. You can have, God forbid, pecan pie. I had all that last Thanksgiving. You know what I woke up at weight-wise the next day? The exact same weight I was the day before, okay? And I've been doing this now for a good long while. So it's just that consistency is so important. And the other thing is, I think the reason people are kind of resistant to this style of dieting is they want to believe there are magic foods out there, because it's easier for people to say than to say, you know, tracking their protein, carbs, and fats and that sort of thing. It's easier to just say, no, it's really just gluten. Gluten's what's making us fat. That's freaking nonsense, okay? People have been eating gluten for 10,000 years, and they didn't start getting obesity problem until 50 years ago. So it's not gluten. Stop it. This guy, there was a big thing on Yahoo. This guy drank 12 cans of soda a day, and he gained a lot of body fat. Well, no shit. He added 600 grams of sugar to his diet per day. That's like 2,400 calories a day he added to his diet. Of course he gained body fat. He would have gained body fat if he added that in chicken and rice. You know what I mean? But unfortunately, people look for things for shock value, and they see that and they go, oh, yeah, it's the soda. That's what's doing it.
Yeah, the sugar.
Look, is sugar a little bit easier to overeat on? Absolutely. But there's no reason you can't have some sugar in your diet and still, you know, if you get your protein, carbs, fats in and hit your requirements, hit your fiber, that you can enjoy some sugar in moderation. I eat ice cream literally every day because I love ice cream. Okay? Now,
okay.
Here's the deal. Flexible dieting, if it fits your macros, it's like a budget, okay? So if right now I'm maintaining my body weight on about 3,000 calories a day. I've had a very successful reverse diet. I'm sure we'll talk about here in a minute. I've had a very successful reverse diet, and I'm maintaining a really lean body weight for me at about 3,000 calories a day. So at 3,000 calories a day, I'm at about 225 grams of protein and like 400 grams of carbs on training days, like 90 grams of fat. Now, I may be slightly off on my calorie calculations. I'm just doing it off the cuff. But so with those numbers, I've got some room to play because I can hit my protein and my fiber numbers pretty easily. And so then if I want to have some ice cream, can I fit that in? Yeah, sure, no problem. But if a competitor or somebody who's dieting down and my carbs are down to 120 grams a day and, you know, I'm under 50 grams of fat, am I going to be able to fit ice cream in and still hit my fiber numbers and my protein numbers? Probably not a whole lot of it. So it's self-regulating. It's like a budget. So if I make $1 million a year, can I afford to go out and buy a $50,000 car if I take care of my mortgage and I take care of my retirement, I take care of all the stuff I need to take care of? Sure, right? I've got some money to play with. But if I make $60,000 a year, should I go out and buy a $50,000 car if it's going to cost me to lose my house and not be able to take care of my kids and all that kind of stuff? Absolutely not. So it's completely self-regulating, and people will like criticize flexible dieting. All they do is eat Pop-Tarts and ice cream. And No. If you're hitting a body composition friendly macronutrient intake, you're going to have to eat a lot of quote unquote clean foods by default, but you will have some room to play. And that's the important part, is taking the, trust me, I went into graduate school hoping I could find magic foods. Right. I wanted to find magic foods. Think about how brilliant I would look, right? I mean, here I am, this PhD in nutrition, and I'm telling people it's okay to eat ice cream. I mean, how hard of a sell do you think that was? Much easier for me to come out and be like, no, I found the 12 magic foods that work. And you know what? People would believe me, and I could probably sell a book and sell millions of copies of that book. But I have this thing called integrity, and I'm not willing to do that. And so I looked at the data, and I just said, you know what? You can eat this stuff, and you can still lose body fat. So I think, again, it's a tough sell to people, but it's the truth. Just is what it is.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. And obviously, if you don't know who Lane Norton is, go to biolane.com and check him out, because Lane is ripped and he's got pictures all over the internet of him. And what you're saying, Lane, is that you eat ice cream. You're not saying that's the way to live, that that's the most healthy way to do things. What you're saying is, hey, listen, I like eating ice cream. I like eating some Pop-Tarts. I feel like if I don't let myself squeeze those into my budget, my calorie budget for the day, I may go and overeat, which I've done myself. I'm sure everyone listening right now has, well, at least most of us can relate to that. So you're not saying, hey, listen, it's good to eat ice cream. No, it's just that you can squeeze it in if you budget it properly.
Well, you have to keep everything in context, right? So let's go back to our idea of a budget, right? So is it economically smart to go out and buy a fast car? No, but it's fun, right? Or buy a boat or these sorts of things. No, if you wanted to do the most healthy thing for your money, all you would do is take every cent, the extra cent you had, and you would invest it and you never touch it, right?
Because sure.
But how much fun would life, right? Like, sure, that money is fun to look at in the bank and watch it pile up, but eventually you want to go do something. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You're going to be miserable. You're not going to do anything. You can live in a one-bedroom apartment and have a ton of money. So you want to live a little bit. And people will talk about health. Health is also mental health. If you're going to Thanksgiving dinner and you're telling your mom and dad, no, I can't have any of that because that's bad for me. I mean, how bad is that for your psyche and your mental health? And the other problem is when you put labels on food, like these foods are good and these foods are bad. You know what? I don't care who you are. You're not just going to eat quote unquote clean foods the rest of your life. You're going to have some bad foods. Okay. And there was actually a study a while back where they looked at people who dieted restrictively or people who dieted, but, you know, just basically just controlled portion size. And what they did was they put them in a room. This is what happened. They put them in a room and they put out like cakes and cookies and all that sort of stuff. And what they found was what they called disinhibition with people who were restrictive dieters, meaning that they couldn't just have one cookie. They went nuts. They overate way more than the people who were non-restrictive dieters. The non-restrictive dieters could have, you know, a cookie or two and stop, but the people who were restrictive could not. And so that's my point, right? So when people, like, that's the argument that always gets brought up, Lane, you can't tell me that a Pop-Tart and a sweet potato, you know, a Pop-Tart is just as good for you as a sweet potato. And that's not what I'm trying to argue. What I'm trying to argue is if having that one Pop-Tart every now and then keeps you from going off the deep end, then yes, it is better for you than a sweet potato. And again, you have to factor in mental health, okay? I mean, because if you're eating, I always say quote unquote clean, because there is no such thing as eating clean. No matter what anybody says, there is no objective definition of clean foods, all right?
Sure.
So I just like to get that out of the way up front. If you're eating clean, there's a definition for that. It's called orthorexia nervosa, okay? It's a proposed eating disorder, all right? Where you're always concerned about how healthy a food is. You've got to live a little bit, but the emphasis is on little. You know, I always say that I went to graduate school for 6 years. I spent 10 years doing biochemistry and nutritional science degrees, and the best nutrition advice I ever got was still from my mother. And she said, everything in moderation.
Everything in moderation.
She's dead on right.
Yeah, no, that's all very important information. And, you know, I'll be honest, I've never been on a diet before. And I have certain principles that I adhere to. And I got maybe a little bit more body fat than I did when a few years back. I'm 37 now, but a lot of that's because I blew up from 185 to 210 because I stopped doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu competitions and I took away all that stuff. So I just and started doing more like strength oriented bodybuilding stuff. But what I always try to tell people is what you say, man. And it depends. If you're one of those people who are like, you know what, I don't really like sweets that much, then fine. But most of us do. And you can fit what Lane's saying is you can fit that into your diet. You can still be lean. The magic fairy kale isn't going to do it. There's no supplement that's going to do it. It really comes down to managing this stuff and tracking it. And Lane, one of the things I try to do is just give people some portion sizes to go by, and then you can make your portion smaller if you're tracking your body, your weight, your circumference, your body fat, your DEXA scan, whatever it is. But yeah, what you're saying is so important, man. And I know you're a busy dude. I want to jump into what your reverse dieting book is all about. You've talked to us about why fad diets are not the answer, why we need to be able to be flexible with what we want in life and how we can do that and still maintain a lean physique. And you've talked about some other things. Let's dive into your reverse dieting book. What's in it that we haven't discussed yet that the listeners should know?
Yeah, absolutely. So reverse dieting was a concept that I came up with, or I don't want to say I came up with it, but essentially it's the diet after the diet. Let's say you've done the things I talk about. You've lost weight slow. You've gotten it off. Or even if you didn't do it the right way, you lost a bunch of weight. What now, right? Because we want to maintain that fat loss, but do you really want to be on diet calories for the rest of your life? You want to be on 1800 calories if you're a guy for the rest of your life? No, you want to have some flexibility to live, right? So I'll say this up front. The purpose of reverse dieting is not to lose body fat. That's a big thing. Now, some people do lose body fat when they reverse. Reverse dieting is essentially slowly adding calories back into your diet to restore your metabolic rate while minimizing body fat regain. And so, for example, I've seen some people who have taken their calories from 1,500 to 3,000 over the course of 9 months or 12 months, doing it very slowly and not gain hardly any body fat. Or then some people do gain a little bit of body fat. But the point is, you're going to gain way less body fat than if you just went back to whatever the hell else you were doing before, because like we've already discussed, that doesn't work. You're just going to regain a bunch of body fat. And so it's essentially, like I said, slowly adding in calories. And so the book goes into it kind of mechanistically, why we think it's there's not a lot of research on reverse dieting, to be honest with you. It's a lot of experience with my clients. But we go into kind of our hypothesis of why we think it will work. I co-wrote it with Sohee Lee. So when I say we, it's myself and Sohee. We have a huge Q&A section, or a huge frequently asked questions section, because there's a lot of questions about it. Some people don't. It's a completely different concept than most people are used to. But essentially, it's just that. It's trying to get you to be able to eat more calories and still maintain a leaner physique, which I think there's a huge market for that. But I think a lot of people have never thought about it that way. They're just used to, okay, well, if I'm dieting, I'm dieting. And when I'm not dieting, I'm just eating whatever I want. And you know what? When I want to get lean again, I'll just diet again. And instead of that, instead of getting on that roller coaster, why not get to the point where you can keep a leaner physique? Because I used to be on that roller coaster. And over the course of several dieting cycles and reverse dieting cycles, I caliper right now around 6% body fat, and I'm eating 3,000 calories a day. And like I said, I had Thanksgiving dinner, ate all the treats I wanted within my macros, and I haven't gained any body fat or negligible amount of body fat. I travel all the time, which is what does a lot of people in. They travel for work or whatever, or family, and they go off their quote unquote diet. I travel all the time. I eat out a lot, probably over 3 times a week. When I'm traveling, I probably eat out every day. And I'm able to maintain my body fat because I've built my metabolism up to the point where, for example, if I was eating, my metabolic rate was at 2,000 calories a day or 1,800 calories a day. If I'm off by 400 calories, that's a big deal. If my metabolic rate's at 3,000 calories a day, if I'm off by 400, that's not such a big deal,
right?
Because the relative difference isn't as much. So what you're doing, in addition to being able to eat more, to be able to maintain a leaner physique, is you give yourself more wiggle room in terms of room for error. So that's kind of reverse dieting in a nutshell. And if people are interested, you can check it out on my site or on Sohee's site or on reversedietbook.com. I have a video out there on YouTube, on my YouTube page, which is youtube.com/BioLane. I have a 25-minute video talking about reverse dieting, so it's not just me trying to grab your money. You can go watch that video and get a much better idea of what it is. And then if you decide that you want some more information, there's that book available to you as well. And if you buy that book, if you go to the site, there's a free chapter available, so you can check it out and see if it's something you're interested in. And then if you buy the book, it also comes with, so he put together cardio programs and training programs that come with it.
Oh, nice.
As well as a free copy of her ebook, How to Count Macros. So it's perfect. You know, if you're listening to this and you're like, well, I don't know how the hell to count macros and I have no idea what reverse dieting is, but you're interested, both books are great. Sohee is an unbelievable writer, and she really distills down science so that the average person can understand it, implement it, and put it right in. And we've actually got a ton of people now. We just had a gal post on my site who, she was eating 900 calories a day for like the last few years, essentially. She was anorexic and just finally decided she'd had enough of not being able to live. And after 9 months, her calories are up to 1,600 calories a day, and she hasn't gained a single pound. So you know what?
Wow.
She hasn't lost any body fat, but she's living now, and she hasn't gained any body fat. That's a huge win.
Right. That's so important. So if you like what you're hearing, make sure you go to BioLane.com. Lane Norton and his co-host Sohee Lee have a great podcast. It's something that I check out. If you're interested in learning more about the macros, counting your macros, reverse dieting, and all the other concepts, that Lane talks about. Make sure you check out his YouTube channel as well. He's got a ton of videos on there and just great information that he's giving away. And like you said, Lane, if they get a little taste and they want more, jump in and get reversedietingbook.com. Lane Norton is the real deal, guys. He is not some guru who is here to sell you some hype. He's been doing this his whole life. He gets people contest ready, and there's no better person that I can think of that can help you get where you want to go. So if you want to dive right in, make sure you go to reversedietingbook.com and check that out. And all the other resources that you mentioned, the My Macro Plus and the My Net Diary, if you're interested in checking out those, I'll have all that information, including Lane's, on the show notes page. Lane, how about any last words for the listeners?
As far as fat loss and muscle gain, just keep in mind that stuff happens slow. And if we can go back to the quote that we opened the show with, things are going to go slow and it's going to be discouraging and it'll be painful. But if you don't quit, if you keep going, he who doesn't quit is impossible to defeat. So if you keep going and keep going and keep going, you're going to get there. Just keep in mind, it's going to be a really slow process. Get in for the long haul. Settle in for the long haul. Don't tell yourself, oh, I don't have a shredded six pack because the magazine at the store said get shredded abs in 6 weeks. They're lying to you, okay? It's going to be a really long time, all right? But that's okay. You got your whole life to get the physique you want, to be healthy. And if you do it right the first time, you get to keep it, okay? That's a huge thing. One of my big pet peeves is I see a lot of times these transformation photos and they show 6 weeks later or 12 weeks later. You know what I'd really like to see? I'd like to see that same transformation photo 6 months later, because a lot of those people, I know I'm in this industry. I know those people and they look like they did before or even worse. So focus on long-term sustainable progress. That should be your goal.
Wise words by Lane Norton. Lane, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your knowledge, your wisdom, and most importantly, your time. I'd love to have you back and talk more about training and supplementation another time, but this was just awesome, and I know everyone listening just got a ton out of it. So thank you so much.
You're welcome, Ted. I appreciate you having me on.
You got it, brother.
You've reached the end of another episode of The Man Project. Connect with us at manprojectpodcast.com. Don't forget to sign up to our newsletter to receive our free tools. See you next episode.